You know, we just had this wonderful event last weekend called Yogananda Fest. Some of you were there. In fact, some of you who were there are now here, which is what we hoped would happen. So it worked in every way. Except this odd thing happened that our people who were so used to doing sound, for some reason the sound got hooked up that we had to have this whole thing on in order to be video recorded and live streamed. And we had to have another whole microphone set on in order to be heard. And to me, I thought, this is a disaster waiting to happen. Because if anything can go wrong with me with sound or recording, it always does. So I thought, oh no, now it's not just one, but three possibilities for it. But somehow I think it managed to work just fine. Okay. I know most of you, a couple of you are brand new, which I'm really happy to see. But I'm going to start out and talk a little bit for people who are newer. But again, there's very few people in this class who have actually studied the chakras a lot, at least through Ananda. So let me ask you, how many of you feel that this is a relatively new subject for you? Okay, good. This is what I thought. So, hi, welcome. Good. So, because, and this is unusual for this class, but there's quite a few people here, at least, who are new to me. So let me just take a moment. Obviously, you've all come to Ananda, so you were either just simply dying to hear about the chakras, or you have heard about Ananda. I'm not sure how you got here. It doesn't really matter, in a way, about Ananda. There's nothing you need to know about our particular path to be able to study, to come to this four-week class. But since you're sitting out there staring at these great souls behind me, and hopefully all of you will be for 4 weeks now, I'd like to just say a word or two about them and about Ananda to you, and then we'll move on with the topic. Ananda is a very large now, probably one of the largest intentional spiritual communities in the world. It's a big global force in bringing spiritual teachings out into the world, specifically as brought to us by Paramahansa Yogananda, who is at the bottom of that series of pictures. He came here in 1920 when he was in his early 20s, sent by his guru, who is the man on our right, whose name is Sri Yukteswar, to bring these teachings to the West, not as new teachings, and you'll hear this as I talk about the chakras, so this is meaningful, but as a way to bring the universal understanding of all religions to the West. So when people asked him, are you bringing us a new religion? He would say, no, I'm bringing you a new dispensation and a new understanding. And what he came to teach us is that there are truths that exist. They can't be created or destroyed, just like energy. They just simply are, and they are what underlie the teachings of all religions. So what we teach, though it has a certain feel to it and a certain energy, because that's what draws people to particular paths, is exactly the same as what Jesus taught, as what Moses taught, as what Buddha taught, any of the great saints or sages, certainly all of what we call avatars, these people who are born really just because we need them, because it's a time in the universe where we're calling for spiritual teachers. We're really calling with all of our heart and soul. And when that happens, very much like it did 2018 years ago, when the Jewish people really needed some help in their direction, and their heart's yearning went out, and Jesus appeared, because Jesus was, of course, a rabbi. That's all that existed at the time. Anyway, we know how that story went. But the point of what I'm trying to say to you, excuse me, is that the teachings that Yogananda came to bring are universal understandings. The phrase in Sanskrit is Sanatan Dharma, eternal truths. And as we start talking about the chakras, it's always interesting to teach the chakras, particularly when there are people in the room that I don't know, because they can sound so esoteric. And so, are you in the wrong class? Are you looking for meditation? Perfect. Somehow I had that intuition. I should have asked you sooner. But come back next time to learn about the chakras. If you go back over there and upstairs, that's where you're supposed to be. Yeah. Because they can seem very esoteric. Because the things that we're about to talk about with the chakras, you can't see with your eyes the way you're used to seeing things. We can't measure them the way Western mind is used to measuring things. We have to have an experience of these teachings in a whole new way in order to realize the deep truth and meaning that the chakras are. They are at the very core of our existence. The chakras, which I'm going to come back and explain, but I want to say this part first. The chakras are exactly what determines how we behave in the world. Every like and dislike that we have, every inclination that we come in with, every time we look at somebody and we say, God, you look so familiar, like I did with Annie. I'm still absolutely certain that I saw you just a day or two ago. It's an interest, but she says, no, you've never seen me. Well, what is that? You know, where does that come from? How is it that some people feel so familiar? Other people you can know for decades and you never quite get them. Or you meet them at first and you have an instantaneous attraction to somebody. Or you have instantaneously feel put off by people. About 5 weeks ago, the event that we put on this weekend called Yogananda Fest, which was this day-long huge event locally here, Ananda in Los Angeles did one in Los Angeles. And they had an interfaith panel at night, and in the evening. That was the evening program, as it was for us. So I was sitting about 3 or 4 rows back in the audience, and a woman walked in and went up on stage, and I looked at my friend Lakshmi, who was sitting next to me, and I said to her, Lakshmi, I love that lady. She said, what do you mean? I said, I love her. I know for sure this is, I'd never seen the woman before. I had no idea who she was. Something happened to me. She walked into the room, and my heart just opened. And just so I don't leave any of you hanging, she was wonderful that night. An extraordinary woman who we can talk about at some other point, not so important. But I went up and introduced myself after her talk. She gave a beautiful talk, went very deep, not just in me, but in everybody in the room. And then the next day, I came back home and I wrote her a letter saying, I don't know if you remember me. Of course, I knew she was going to remember me because she was paying the same attention I was. But I said to her, and this is really a long shot, and I'm saying to you, I expect you to take good care of yourself. But what you just did on Saturday night, we're doing in 4 weeks, and we would love to have you here. And she wrote back instantly and said, I will do everything I can to be there. And she was. She flew up because she too felt, not just with me, she actually felt it with all of Ananda, but what is that? I mean, how can we explain those things? Excuse me for just 1 minute. How come you're not over at the meditation? Anyway, how do those things happen? You know, really, we're so used to them. Or things happen that we call deja vu, right? We've been there before. We feel like the exact same thing that is happening today. We say, did this just happen? Did I just bump into Annie 2 days ago? You know, everybody's had these experiences. Of course we have, because we have had these experiences before. I do know Gwen. I loved her the minute I met her. I mean, who knows what? I'm going to say it in a way that could sound silly, but it's not. She could have been an adoring sister in some previous lifetime, or a father to me who loved me and adored me and took care of me, or a best friend. I mean, we don't know, but I knew that woman when she walked in, and I loved her. And there are other people who I want to love everybody. I want to be non-judgmental. I want to be supportive of every soul in the world. But, or I should say and, not but, there are times when I'm challenged in those ways, where I have to work at opening my heart and not having critical thoughts run through. Do you know what I'm saying? And it's very interesting. For those of you who don't know me, you know my name is Shanti, I think, because it was published. So I actually play a lot of different roles in this place called Ananda. But one of them is that I'm one of the spiritual directors of the community. And it was an extraordinary gift for me. It's been many years now that I moved into that position. But I said to myself, you are now the spiritual potential, spiritual guide, teacher, because I'm a big bhakti yogi, right from my heart and love people. You will be the mother in this community. You can't decide, I like this person, I don't like that person, this person just irritated me. You can't do that. You have to see absolutely your practice more than ever is seeing the divine looking back at you from every living being that you meet and love them as if it were God standing right in front of you, because it is. And I knew that I had to do that. So boy, has it helped me discover some of the inherent inclinations that I came in with. Why did I come in with them? And this is what we're going to talk about in terms of the chakras. But again, we can't measure this in the way we're used to measuring things. We can't measure it in the way that we say, take two atoms of hydrogen and one in oxygen, get them to come together and you have a drop of water. You know, you can't measure it the way we're used to measuring things in Western science. It just doesn't go that way. And just by the way, for a couple of you, in my spare time, I'm a physician. And I practice medicine, and I've been medically trained at Stanford, so I'm a scientist. So I'm saying it to say I'm used to that also. Show me the data. Show me the evidence. Why would I want to give this person this drug, or why would I want to treat them in this way? These things really matter, and I know they matter. But now we're looking at a whole other science. This is why Swami Kriyananda, who lived with Paramahansa Yogananda for the last several years of his life, and then went on to found all of Ananda. And that's Swamiji right there on your right. But this is why when he wrote the Raja Yoga book, he calls it the art and science of Raja Yoga. Raja Yoga means royal yoga. It means the whole philosophy, practice of all of what yoga means. And yoga means union. It really means coming back to that place where we realize, where we remember, the Sanskrit word is smriti. We remember from the inside out who we are. Okay, I'm saying a lot right now, but I'm really trying to set the stage for weeks of learning about something that it would be very easy to say, this is ridiculous. Because we can only prove it to you by inviting you to develop practices that allow you to have the experiences literally in your energetic spine. Because once you begin to have those experiences, you know without a doubt that these chakras exist. You know without a doubt that reincarnation is simply the truth. I mean, I've had people walk out of my class before several times now over the years. Prove to me that reincarnation happens, they'll say. And I say to them, well, hang in there and take some deep breaths and stay with me and you'll feel that there's proof. No, can you give me scientific proof, they say. And on three different occasions over the years, they've just stood up and walked out. And it's perfect. It's just absolutely perfect. Clearly, they also were in the wrong class, just like those people, but for different reasons. So it's not like that's a bad thing. But this takes a leap of faith in the beginning to be able to talk about such subtle energies that cannot be seen with physical eyes that ultimately can be heard, and we'll talk about sounds that we hear with the chakras, but again, can't be measured. If you're too scientific and Western, you're going to have to sit still for quite a while till you begin to accept some of these things that we're going to talk about. I want to say to you, it's as real, it's not as real, let me take that back. It's more real than what we're looking at right now that we think is real. Because, for instance, you're sitting on that chair, and you think you're sitting on something solid, and you think that you're separate from the chair. But the absolute truth is, and what the quantum physicists have shown us now, is that all matter, all thoughts, every single thing in existence, and we're going to talk about how everything comes into existence, is made up of the same substrate called energy. So every single thing, that chair and you, are made up of exactly the same energy. And the only difference is it's vibrating at one frequency and you're vibrating at a different frequency. And because of that, you actually have the illusion that you're separate from it. Now, I don't know if all of you have seen these things. I have. At least most of us have read about people doing psychic surgery where they put their hands right inside of your abdomen, just like that, and take out an appendix or whatever it is they want to take out. We've heard of people levitating. We've heard of people walking on water, literally, not just in the Bible, but we've seen it. People walk across burning hot coals. How do these things happen? How could they possibly happen? I wouldn't put my foot on a hot coal. That would be just simply silly of me. I'm not in the place to do that. And I can't levitate from that chair, but people do. I cannot appear in two places in the same exact moment, but many people have reported knowing that to be true. These are phenomena that happen once people have basically aligned their energy in such a way that instead of energetically, if you will, for a moment, swinging like this, like a pendulum, as we meditate more, as we do spiritual practices more, the pendulum swings less and less and less. And then we're just resting in the very core of who we are, which is pure energy. Again, I'm going to show you in a moment. And from that place of being perfectly centered, we then are able to do things that would seemingly be impossible for us. We're able to be in touch with other beings in ways that we would not have been able to be in touch. We know things. We have intuition. We all have intuition. But we've cleared the way to be able to sit and to know. Without a doubt, we can begin to know things. And the more those miracles, they're not really miracles at all. They're the natural state of things. The more they happen to us, then we begin to say, wow, things are not what they appear to be. There's a line from the Bhagavad Gita, what is commonly called the Hindu Bible. Fair enough. It's a dialogue that takes place between Krishna, just like Yogananda, kind of pure manifestation of the divine on earth, and his disciple Arjuna. And Krishna says to Arjuna, what looks like night to the regular man is day to the yogi. And what looks like day to the yogi is night to the saint. Meaning, if we go further and further into these practices, it's not that we don't still function in the world. We have to. That's why I wanted to let you all know. I practice medicine. I'm the manager of the church. I'm running a massive couple of businesses, a couple of them. I'm out in the world. I'm making things happen. I'm working with people. I'm a great organizer. I'm very efficient. I could say all these words, but not for a moment anymore. As much as I can help it, I better qualify that because, of course, I still live with my fair share of delusion too. But at my best, I don't believe that that's where my happiness comes from. I don't believe that that's what's going to make me feel whole and rich and at peace or contented. In fact, I know better because I've never felt more at peace or more contented ever in my life. It's been a good life. You can hear lots of accomplishments, lots of good things happening, lots of love in my life. I mean, people kind of love, interpersonal love, many good things. I've never felt what I feel when I go deep into meditation. You can't describe that pure peace, that pure sense of contentment, of true joy, of being there. It's nothing like what's happening in the world. And we have to live in the world, so it's better to have a lot of good friends and have people love you and to be successful and have a roof over your head. Those are all really good things. But what happens in a moment? In a moment, the tsunami comes or the volcano erupts or the fire breaks out or the diagnosis of cancer comes or whatever it is. That's the nature of the human condition. But it's not the nature of the soul. The soul is everlasting. The soul is pure joy. The body goes, but as Yogananda tells us and as every great teacher will tell you, you go home, you take off your clothes at night. Let's just say you're somebody who goes home and you take off all your clothes and you just throw them in a pile on the floor and you get into bed. Let's say somebody does that. Did you die because you took off your clothes? Did anything horrible happen? You get up the next day, you put on the next set of clothes. And in essence, every true saint will tell you that's what happens when we die. The soul leaves untouched and the body goes. And it's, you know, many of these teachers, not just these teachers, but all teachers. You know, I never really understood the Bible, the Old Testament or the New Testament or many of these spiritual teachings before I came onto this path, though I was a serious practicing Jew. I insisted that my family practice Orthodox Judaism. So I was very interested in religion. I thought I understood it, but I didn't really understand anything. Now I see that even Moses was trying to say something, but I wasn't being taught. And what they're all saying is, don't be fooled. You are not this body. You are not these thoughts. We're not any of what it looks like. We're living with a lot of delusion and illusion. And it's tricky. I've often said to God, you made this really hard for us, didn't you? Because it looks so darn real. It gets us, you know? So we fight with people and we try and get as many degrees as we can and we do whatever jobs we can do and we fall in love and then we fall out of love or they fall out of love and that's even worse. And then we think we're going to die, but then the next time we fall in love, we go, ah, now I see why that didn't work because I needed to get here. And that's how life goes. It just goes on and on like that out there. The only thing that's constant, the only thing ever is who we are inside. And I'll just say a little more about this, because this is the essence to being able to understand why would we spend 4 weeks of our life studying the chakras. When you look at people who have been through extraordinarily difficult things, extraordinarily difficult. I mean, it can be very difficult if you go to work one day and you come home and your house is burned down. That's a big deal. You know, if any of us lived in the North Bay last year, within 15 minutes, you're home and everything, all the stuff that you thought you couldn't live without is gone. Of course, those people are still living and they're rebuilding, and there's a lesson for all of us. But even worse, what about people who lived in the concentration camps during the Holocaust, or were slaughtered during the Rwandan Holocaust, or, you know, or the people who housed people to save their lives, but then they themselves were caught and put in these horrible prisons, horrible. Everybody knows some of these horror stories. I'm not going to repeat them. Who are those people who are able to live through those experiences or the Buddhists who were brutalized by the Chinese? Brutalized, right? I mean, Tibet was just destroyed, in essence, and people were tortured and treated horribly. And what about those Buddhist nuns and monks who, while they were being tortured, were praying for their torturers? Christ, who was crucified, literally saying, "Forgive them, they know not what they do." The people who were in the concentration camps in Germany, really holding prayer vigils at night, risking their lives, and asking the other people in the barracks to pray for the Germans. Who are these people? You know? I read these books all the time. I read a lot of history and a lot of good historical fiction, because I get so much from watching what it means when these people are so open, so centered in themselves, so with that little lotus flower at their heart chakra like this, that they remember that we're all deeply connected, that if I treat you badly, I may as well just treat myself badly. If I have a negative thought about you, it's hurting me. If I get mad because some German is torturing me or raping me or starving me, which, believe me, I was tempted. I was born and raised Jewish. Most of the people I know lost their whole families in the Holocaust. That goes deep. It would be very easy to hate. What is it that allows us to not hate, but rather to love in those circumstances? If you ask me, that's what I want to be learning. I know what it does to hate or to judge or to feel jealous. I know what that feels like. I've spent enough time there. What does it feel like to love under all circumstances? And what gets us there? And that's what we're going to be talking about. So what we've been taught is that when the sperm and the ovum meet, in that very microsecond, it's less than a microsecond, that there's a flash that literally goes up. I don't want to call it heaven, because it's not heaven, but a flash that happens. And in that moment, the souls, literally the individual souls that are waiting to be reborn, to continue this journey that they're on. Let me back up from there for a minute, because it's more important. Let me start from the very beginning, before there were individual souls, so that we can see this path that we're on. It's actually very important. In the beginning, there was what we're going to call superconsciousness. Some people call that the divine. Some people call it God. Some people call it space. I mean, you can call it what you want, but we're going to call it the superconsciousness from which everything that we know was created. And I'm going to give you a lot of information tonight. Just, again, we have to do this to be able to get into our astral spine here. from that state of superconsciousness came an idea. The idea being, what would happen if from this being, this very essence, not me, but it, I sent some of that energy out and started creating things. Created the world, created, then filled the world with trees, rocks, animals, people, in essence. So there's this some quantum of energy that literally had the thought or the idea. We call that the causal world, by the way, just to give you terminology, that there would be such a thing as creation. Then behind that thought, that essence of superconscious energy, of the infinite one, puts some energy into it. So there's a thought, there's energy put behind it, and that energy creates what is called the astral world, and then from that, the physical world is made manifest. Everything that we know. So there's the causal world, infinite consciousness, the astral world, the world of energy, and then the physical world. And the physical world is simply energy that has now been materialized into people, chairs, carpet, rocks, insects. Okay? This is a big premise that I'm asking you to believe if it's new to you. Because again, you'll find it from every great saint. And if you don't think it was in their teachings, go back and read it again now that you've heard it. I promise you, any true saint is saying the same thing. And I'm saying this to you from a place of knowing, from studying comparative religion after I began to know these things. Okay, so what is being made, is being manifested, are literally different pieces of energy or different amounts of energy vibrating at different frequencies to manifest the material world. Everything we see and know. And part of that, of course, is us, these human beings. So we are, each of us, some minuscule part of this infinite consciousness. Each one of us, it comes in from what we call a soul, an individualized soul. So you could imagine it however you want, a mass of anything. Make it real, because the human mind cannot think in infinite terms. We have to have something that we can see. You could imagine a huge circle with an infinite number of bubbles in it, and those bubbles come out, and it makes all of us. You see it however you want to see it. Soon you won't need to see it, but for right now, you have to have an image to be able to relate to. Each of those tiny little bits of energy that become us, individualized souls from this infinite source of energy, is called a jiva. That's what an individualized soul is, each of us. And that jiva, that bit of soul, exists forever until it has made the journey back to reunite with that infinite source of energy. So we're thrown out here, and they say, and I mean the great masters say, it takes 8 to 10 million lives to even be born as a human being. Just to get back to being a human being. That every one of us at some point were rock, mineral, plants, insects, animals. Until we keep reincarnating that soul or evolve into the human condition. Which is a great gift to be born as a human being, because it is the first time that we have free will. And it's the first time where we have the ability that rocks don't, plants don't, animals don't, to move to a place of this super consciousness. We can do that. We could, every one of us, actually become fully realized beings in this very life, probably if we decided to. Most of us were hanging back a little because we're not quite ready to let go of all of what we're attached to. You know, I remember many years ago when I first started, I mean, now, see, in my late 20s, so 40-some years ago when I first started hearing this, I used to say to my husband, why is it that anybody would want to not be born again? You know, I was a child of the 60s, and I was having a very good time in life. I mean, really, I just sort of had it all. I was young, I was really healthy, I was pretty, I was, you know, I had a good job. I mean, everything was so right. I was crazy in love with that first husband. I'm saying to him, why do people not want to come back? I'd always want to come back to this. I mean, now I think I should be ashamed to be saying it. Never mind, it's being recorded. But it was true. It's exactly what I used to think. It took me decades, which are nothing. I mean, really, it's nothing. You hear me talking about millions of lives, to realize, in a way, just how silly that was, how much more there is than what I thought I would want to keep coming back to. But I'm saying it to say that part of why we're not making more rapid progress on this soul's long journey back to its home in God, I mean, use the word, call it what you want. I could keep saying infinite consciousness, super consciousness. I'm going to use the word God. But it's because we don't. There's a part of us that doesn't really want that. We're happy out here. We keep thinking over and over that we're going to get it right and we're going to have perfect happiness in this life. And the way we get fooled is that we get very close. We get so close sometimes. We fall in love. We get a great job. We get a beautiful home. Just feels like heaven, except it's not. And if anything happens, then we think, now I learned a lesson. Now I know a lot. I know more about myself. I know more about these things. I'll get it next time. We really are hooked here on a lot of what we're after. We're hooked on it. We don't want to let it go. We have our hand in the cookie jar, and we're holding on to about 10 cookies, and they won't fit out, so we can't get our hand out. And somebody says, drop the cookies. But we're not going to let go of them. We keep thinking if we wiggle it just right, we can have our hand and eat the cookies too, right? I mean, it's just how it goes. And that's what we do with life. So it takes us a while, a few million lives, but, you know, who's counting? It's hard to remember that. We don't remember any of our previous incarnations as a rule. Every once in a while, somebody will say to me, no, I'm certain this happened in life. And I could tell you, for a lot of reasons, I feel pretty certain that I died in one of those concentration camps. And I came back in as a Jew this time, and I'm working it through. But I have so many things that I know that I shouldn't know that I just feel certain about it. But, you know, I mean, who really knows? Mostly we don't remember our lives. Yogananda says it would torture us. But most of us can't even think with a clear conscience about things we've done in this life that we're not happy about. He said, if you only knew what you've done in past lives. Because we all come from the same source, and we're all heading back to the same place. And this is actually sobering but true, that Yogananda, and I'm quoting him because he was an avatar. He was born as a baby, fully realized, knowing everything that we're talking about. Same with Jesus, same with Krishna. Like these, not just great saints, it's different when these people who are avatars. But everything he said, I trust. Everything Jesus said, I trust. Everything Moses said. These are people who are truth. They would never speak an untruth to us. But he said, anything you see anybody else doing, you've either done it already or you'll still have to do it. Now, that is sobering. So when I look at many of the people doing what they're doing in our world today, people behaving really badly, I mean seriously badly, I just say, please let that be behind me. That's a prayer of mine, you know. And for the most part, it is. for the most part, we don't lose that much ground. I mean, it would be very unlikely that in my next life I would be a murderer. You know, I think it's not anything I'm going to move on to. But it can happen. So part of our job is to be asking ourselves, what direction are we heading? Every thought that we have, every action that we do, every decision that we make, is it taking us closer to our divine self, or is it taking us away from our divine self? And again, when we get to the actually talking about the chakras, you'll see how subtle it is and not necessarily easy. Actually, the concepts are pretty simple, but not easy. And there's a difference, you know. To tell the truth is a very simple thing, and even to know that it's true, to act in accordance with it is very challenging for all the reasons I've been talking about. We're all drawn out into this world of delusion with a huge, huge, huge number of desires and likes and dislikes. And they keep us bound out here. They keep us out here. They keep us desiring just a little more of this, of that, of the next thing, of the next thing. And it's very hard to turn your back on those desires, which are energy. Remember, I said everything's energy. So it's just a simple question of drawing that energy in and out of the world and redirecting it all into the very core of your being. Not easy, though, because they have a magnetism. They hold us. They have a spell. I had a very dear friend once who, a man who lives up in Ananda, who used to travel a lot, really a lot. He still does, only now he's living in India traveling and it's different. But because Ananda Village is where it's located, almost every flight in the United States that you take to get back towards Nevada City, you go through Las Vegas. So he was this great soul traveling around the country teaching these great teachings, meditation, Kriya Yoga. And he always said to come through Las Vegas and sit there for hours. And he said one day, it's like 5 a.m, he's catching a flight out of Vegas to get up to Sacramento. And he's looking around, you know, I don't know how many of you have ever been to Las Vegas, but when you're sitting in that airport, you have this constant sound of everybody gambling. There's as many people gambling at 5 a.m. as there is at 10 p.m. It's amazing. And you know, they're pulling those handles down on those slot machines constantly. I mean, it's very noisy. And it's a very, very low energy. We'll talk about the first chakra. Las Vegas resides in the first and second chakra. It's how we could define those lower chakras. Anyway, he'd be sitting there all the time. And he said, very humbly, he goes, well, I have to admit, I was not my best spiritual self. He said, but I was sitting there and I was talking to the Divine Mother. And I said, Divine Mother, you have me doing all this traveling and I always have to come back through Las Vegas. And I'm just, can you just like make sure that I stay very conscious of you and hold you with me? Like, bring me in out of this energy. He was sitting in the airport praying and praying. He gets on the plane. He sits down. In the row behind him comes a woman with a brand new baby. He said you could tell by the cry that it was absolutely brand new. And the baby starts screaming the minute he gets on the plane. And it does not stop screaming. And he says, so I was sitting there having just said to Divine Mother, come to me. So I had to accept that this was the form that she was choosing. So he said, I listened to this baby cry and my heart opened to it. And I started realizing this is a brand new baby. It's just coming into this world. It's probably thinking, what in God's name happened? I had this beautiful home. First of all, I was just probably in some beautiful loka as a free soul. Now, then at least I was in this warm, dark, fabulous little womb. Now I'm out here and the baby was having none of it. And he said, I wanted to go back to the baby. He said, but I didn't because I thought the parents would get mad at me. And I wanted to say to the baby, keep screaming. No matter what you do, your whole life, keep screaming. They're going to try and get you to quit crying for God for your home that you just left. They're going to dangle all kinds of colorful trinkets in front of you and try and get you to want those trinkets and to reach for them and to get engrossed in them. Don't fall for it, he's saying. And, you know, the story just, I mean, it was like a super conscious reaction. It just, of course, what he was trying to say is, that's what happens to us. You know, we don't have those little, I forget what they're called now, things you put on a kid's crib. What are they called? Mobile. We don't have mobiles. People aren't shaking a real rattle in front of us. But come on, what's the difference between that and what we want as grown-ups? It's just our own kind of mobile and our own kind of rattles. And I mean, it was so brilliant what he said. Don't fall for it. But, I mean, just to defend us a little bit, you know, it's been made challenging intentionally so that if we're going to find our way back to our divine self, we have to work for it. We have to really want it. We have to begin to turn all of our attention as much as we possibly can, given where we all are. We're all standing in a different place, again, because we have a blueprint within us that's dictating where we are. We have an energetic blueprint. And so we can only move forward from where we are. Self-honesty, very important. So we're part of this super conscious entity. We've now been thrown out into the world as a jiva. We live each life in whatever form it is when that life has ended, in whatever way. The insect dies, the plant dies, the animal dies, our soul goes back as it goes someplace. We're not going to get into where all souls go because they don't all go to the same place, but it leaves for a while, and then we keep being reborn because now the soul's on a journey. This jiva is on a journey, and the journey is something that first very unconsciously, but then as human beings, it gets more and more conscious, is calling us home. We are being drawn towards our home in the divine. We know it less in certain forms. We know it more as a human being. Some of us are very clear. This is what we want. Other people, maybe they walk in for a Med 1 class, or first time you've ever been here, you're here for a chakra class, you don't even know why. But I will tell you for sure, something drew you in here that's bigger than what it looks like. Everybody who's sitting here is in this sacred space where people have called upon the divine. This was a Catholic church for decades before we bought it in the 80s or early 90s, 90, yeah, before that. But for decades and decades, people have been here praying and asking this divine entity to reveal itself to them. Doesn't matter what the religion was. This is a sacred space. There's beautiful energy in here. You're being impacted by it, whether you know it, whether you want it. And for whatever reason, you were drawn. Often I say to people on a Sunday, how did you get here? They said, you know, I've been driving by this church for 8 years, 10 years, 3 months. Somehow today, I just knew I had to come in. Something happens, and we're drawn. So we may not feel like, okay, I'm going to give my whole life to God right now, but we might feel like, I'm going to start taking classes. I'm going to come either here or somewhere a little more. I'm going to actually find out what it is to sit and meditate and see what I need to do to develop a practice of just being quiet. And then, as if we keep doing that, I will tell you, almost inevitably, we get more and more and more drawn because it feels wonderful. It's our true nature that we've been away from for so long. And as we come back closer to that true nature, we start saying, what is this that's happening to me? I don't know. And other people will come up and they'll say, did you do something wonderful with your hair? You look so great. They'll say, did you lose a lot of weight? God, you look so much younger. You know, they're really people who are just taking Med 1 say to us by week 3, all the time it happens. People say, I'm not fighting with my boss anymore. What is that? Did the boss change? Of course not. You changed. You begin to change. And it begins to be reflected everywhere. And it feels really good. Now, sometimes it's too much. The effort's too much. We leave for a while. Somebody comes back and says, well, I was here 3 years ago, but now I'm just coming back. I used to come. What happened? I don't know. They said, I thought I was going to go on a one-month vacation. I hear it all the time. Suddenly, 3 years later, wow, now I'm back. I can't even think of where that happened. Well, lifetimes go by like that. We're all in the same boat. It's not bad. Okay, now we have to get back to the story of the soul. Any questions yet? Please feel free to ask questions. I promise you, you're not the only one with it. So don't hesitate. Put your hand up. Stop me. Make a comment. Ask a question whenever you want. Okay? You know, it's 8:25. Should we take a little break? Does anybody, you would like a break? Okay, I'll tell you what. Let's try and keep the break to 5 minutes if we can, because I'd really love to try and end on time tonight. Now, if 10 of you come up and ask me a question over the break, I'm going to be very annoyed. The Himalayas, and who is said to be always seen over centuries at that same age. He doesn't age. And there are people who live with him in the mountains, and he's seen, I mean, throughout time, people see him. So, you know, because the soul is what it is, I mean, have you ever been to our Sunday service yet? Yeah. So, you know, we do that festival at the end, and one of the lines in there is, Jesus appeared to the great master Babaji, said, the lights on my higher altar have been growing dim. It's a beautiful thing, though, still lit on lower altars of good works. And then Jesus says to Babaji, let us together, united in Christ love, set lights lit. So their souls are part of that infinite consciousness. It's hard to think of them as people, but those souls have been here forever. They are a part of what we're manifested from. So. Yeah. He was probably trying to. For any of you who know Dave or she, I don't think there's anybody. He's a very, very, very great soul. And he's now running. He's the head of the whole Kriya ministry globally. Kriya Yoga is the type of meditation that we teach here. Takes about a year to be able to be initiated into it, a year of taking Med 1 and Raja Yoga and a lot of different classes. And he runs it all over the world, and he's also created a monastery for all the monks in India now. He's beautiful. So he was probably helping that baby in ways we don't know, but I thought that image that he projected for us, I mean, it stayed with me for years. Yeah, exactly. Right. It's so perfect. We have this jiva who's trying to make its way back to its true divine potential. And it's just finding that it needs a lot of vehicles to do that in. I always use the image of if you're trying to hitchhike from New York to California and you get a ride that takes you to Ohio and then you get out and then you get in the next car and it takes you to whatever's next in the West. What's west of Ohio, Michigan, and then Illinois. Anyway, I'm going to quit because the map's going to leave my mind. But I could do it, but it's not worth our time. Anyway, would keep getting out of one car and into another to complete your journey. And really, in essence, that's what we do with these bodies. We keep trying to get to our goal. And whether we're aware of it or not, which is what I was saying before we took a break, our soul knows. Our soul never forgets. So we might be so busy screaming in the world or playing with our trinkets that we're not paying attention to the soul, but the soul still has this. The line from our service that we do on Sundays is a prayer goes up in wordless yearning. It's just such a beautiful phrase, wordless yearning. You just feel the heart in there and the soul of it, and that's what's happening. So these souls want to come back because they want to, they know that they're going to complete this journey. So I started to say before, when an ovum and a sperm unite and the spark goes up, there are literally souls who are drawn energetically, magnetically, exactly to that energy of that sperm and ovum. It's a perfect match. Let me put it that way. It happens at an energetic level, exactly what that soul needs to take its next steps. Now, think about the implication of that. You know, when you think of all of the things that happen in life and all of the times when you're sure, you know, that you didn't get the right parents or, you know, you couldn't possibly have, or what is this sister doing in your life, or, you know, why can't you get into the school you want to get into? Whatever it is, that jiva is coming back with what we'll call for right now. I'm just trying to create an image for you. It leaves this body with the energetic blueprint of who we are. So it's easy to think of it in this life, but there have been so many lives before, and they've been working, and I'm going to describe all of this to you, but on what we call this astral spine. It's an energetic, the energy at the core of our being. Remember I said to you, there's a thought, there's energy, and then that energy manifests as matter. Remember I said that? As all material things. That's what happens to us. This energy comes, and from that energy, we are made. And there's a blueprint for it. It's no surprise who we are or what we look like or what our inclinations are. Or as I said at the very beginning, who we're drawn to and who we're not. It's already a part of the jiva left with it. And when it comes back, the first thing that happens is that the medulla is formed. The medulla is the part of our brain right at the brain stem that has to do with all of the neurologic processes in our body that are, just for the sake of understanding, I'll call automatic. I mean, the real word is autonomic, but it doesn't matter. So breathing, for instance, you don't think about breathing. Your heart beating, those particular functions. If you have an injury to the medulla, you die instantly because you stop breathing and your heart stops beating. There's very little else that we can't fix in the body, and we're getting better and better and better at it. Those of you who were at my talk on Saturday heard me talking about how the brain's changing and neuroplasticity and people who had massive strokes and we thought they would never learn to speak again. Now we're realizing that we can actually help people learn to speak, and because of how we know that the brain cells are, they're much more plastic than what we thought. We used to think brain cells here, everyone's made by the time you're 20-something. You get no more. When they die, they die. Turns out that's not true. But that also is a whole other lecture, and I'm not going to go there. But we now know that every other part of the brain and a lot of the whole neuro system, we can do great things with, but not the medulla. So a flash, this jiva is connected with that sperm and ova. The medulla is made. Next comes the spinal cord, the whole nervous system, and then follows all of the other organs of the body. The brain is made first, everything in the nervous system, okay? That's just on a physical plane. The energy that's informing it, that's saying do this, do that, become this, become that, comes in with a memory. Now, let me just stop for a minute and tell you about a little thing called, some of you in this room have heard me talk about it before, Curlian photography. Curlian photography is a way that was discovered some decades ago now, between 20 and 30 years probably, of photographing energy, literally pure, raw energy. We could have never done this before, but we're living in this age of energy and all these things are suddenly becoming possible. So they photograph a leaf, but we're photographing energy. So you see this whole outline of the leaf. It's energetic pattern. If I'm trying to get Connie Hernandez to come here and show you a slideshow the third week of this class, she's remarkable. She's not saying yes yet, but if she does, it'll be great. I actually have to be away the third week, and I promise you, you'll be glad I'm gone and she's here. She's fabulous. She'll show you some of this. You see the leaf, but you see energy behind it that makes all the little markings in the leaf. Then you take that leaf and you cut it in half, and you lay half of the leaf down, and you take another picture. And what do you see? Curlian photography. You see the entire leaf in the next picture because nothing happened to the energy. All that we did is we took away the physical manifestation of it. The energetic pattern of the leaf is still there. So in that way, I could give you a lot of examples, but I'm already not even going to get to the first chakra tonight, and that's not good news. So, but this is really important. You cannot understand the chakras if you don't have all of this. So I promise you when we actually get to the chakras, it'll make a lot more sense, hopefully. So that jiva comes down, and it is the energetic pattern of who we are going to be in this life, not because it was determined outside of us, but because as we've lived life after life after life, every single thought that we have, every action that we've taken, every reaction that we've had, every desire, everything, because it's all energy vibrating at a different frequency. It's essential that you know this. Energy can neither be created nor destroyed. It can always be transformed. And that's the good news for us. We can transmute and transform this energy. But as much energy as is there, that's what's there, right? Nobody argues with that. First law of thermodynamics, we all learned it in school. We all believe it. It's been proven. So we come in, and there is this energy. It starts in the medulla, back here, and it works its way down, making the spinal cord, because the energy is going down, and then it's manifesting physically. The energy's there. The spinal cord comes later. Can you understand that? This is very important. Everything else comes later. In that energetic spine, which we call the astral spine, and it is as real as any, it's more real than whatever you've thought you've known as real. What is day to the yogi is night to the man, and this is just the way it is. We're living in a play of lights and shadows. This is what we call delusion. These are just reflections of divine light vibrating at different frequencies, and it's like watching a movie. You're watching the movie. It's nothing. It's just shadows. It's just light. What we don't know is we're living a movie. It's exactly the same thing, okay? But what's real is the energy behind it. That's what's in the middle of the core of all of us, coming down this astral spine, okay? And sending out all of this energy that says everything. You're going to be thin no matter what you do. You won't be able to gain weight. No matter what you do, you're not going to be able to lose weight. You're going to really hate chocolate. You're going to love vanilla. You're going to never understand why people need to have 30 pairs of shoes in their closet, but you're going to be somebody who can't get enough shoes. And on and on and on. Nothing too small, nothing too big. We come in with it. The good news, energy can always be transformed. That's the good news. Not like we're stuck with it, but boy, do we have to work hard to make changes. because the inclination, the flow of energy, is to be exactly that. And we're saying, but wait a minute, we want to make progress. We want to grow spiritually. We want to remember more about who we are. You're saying, yeah, we can do that. And we're going to teach you how to do that. But it takes effort. It takes energy. It takes willpower. It takes willingness. It takes commitment. It takes flexibility. Now, why am I using these particular words? Because as this energy comes down and carries these inclinations with it, these inclinations are basically dropped off at little stations along the way. They're stations. So when it's something that has to do with how secure we feel in the world, that gets carried all the way down to this little whirlpool of energy. So there's this spine of energy, but there are these little wheels, little whirlpools of energy that are specifically, they get stopped at certain places. And I'll explain more and it'll make sense. But from here through the medulla to the base of our spine, there's six of them. And these spinning whirlpools of energy that we came in with that are saying, oh, look at this. This is who you are. This is who you are. You feel insecure about this. You're a dictator. You're this, you're that. They're all in these little transmitter stations called chakras. Okay? This is what the chakras are. They're blueprints of our energy that were here before we are and have determined who we are. Okay? And each of them carry with them huge associations to many, many things, much more than you could get in a four-week course. There's a chakra workbook over there for sale for not very much money. There's Savitri's book, I forget the name of it now, little book about chakras, relatively inexpensive. If you want to know more, really, I've Googled this stuff. Do not just Google it and read what you read online. It's not the truth. Savitri's books and some of the stuff that you can get, I'm sure not just here, I'm sure there's other great chakras for starters, thank you. But there's other people teaching. I'm not saying you have to get it here, but I'm saying, you know, the chakras are like woo-woo-woo. They're like that, a little woo-woo. So you take some people who are far out into left field, a little, not even unstable, but just flighty, you know, probably their second chakra is a little out of balance. They can have a real lot of fun with these things, and a lot of what you can read online is not going to be as solid as this. But you will see that every chakra, for good reason, probably much more than we'll be able to share even in these 4 weeks, has a lot of different associations with it. Each chakra is associated with a color. Why is that? Somebody didn't just decide, you know, 15 billion years ago, let's make the first chakra yellow. What the heck? You know? Or let's give it this, let's just say it's associated with this sound or with this planet or with this crystal, because they are, every chakra has those associations because of its energetic vibration. So the color, if you knew how to really have a deep experience of your first chakra balance, you would actually feel and see and know the color yellow. It's not just assigned to it, right? Color's vibration, sound is vibration. Everything is. We know that. Every color's different. You know, there's whole healing modalities that are based on this. Shine different color lights on people. What happens if you put somebody in red light? What color are the strobes in discos? What colors do they make them? Usually not mostly very common, beautiful purples and blues. No, there's a lot of red. There's a lot of bright colors flashing at certain frequencies. Why? Because they want you to be stuck in your first chakras. You know, if somebody comes in there and goes, are they going to want to get up and dance to all the disco and have all the alcohol they want you to drink? And no, of course not. So you go in and you hear a certain music. It draws you. into certain chakras. We'll talk more about this too. This is why we need to be very mindful of the places we go into, of what music we play in our home, because it's just vibration. It's just energy. It will have a profound impact on you. I promise you, if I could put you in a room and play heavy metal music or acid rock, you'd be a lot more agitated than if I put you in a room with some music from our book and gift shop, right? Unless you're somebody who's got a lot of your energy stuck down here. And not just stuck, because we need every chakra. There's no such thing as a good or a bad chakra. The whole point is to get them in balance, which means wide open, so there's not this little whirlpool over here. But in ways that we'll talk about, that you draw all of that energy into the middle, that astral spine, and allow it to just flow. So that, for instance, I have to do this because it's almost 9 o'clock and I've got to say something about one of the chakras. But I'll come back and pick up where I was. But the first chakra, which is called the root chakra here, it's called the earth chakra, because it's about, that chakra has everything to do with how secure that we feel, how strong we are, how committed we can be, how we can develop loyalty, which Yogananda says loyalty is one of the most important things on this, on any spiritual path. So we have to be strong, we have to be steadfast, we have to be committed, we have to be willing to persevere. We need to be able to be loyal. But what happens if we're just stuck on our own ideas and we're steadfast and strong and loyal to that, and we need everybody to do everything the way we see it? We become a dictator. You can be sure that Hitler and other people like him had a lot of swirling energy stuck outside of their astral spine right here. And really, I mean that, you know, because that's what happens. So it's not that those qualities are bad qualities. We need those qualities. That's like building a foundation. It's like getting ourselves centered and ready. Yes, I'm going to be loyal. What am I going to be loyal to? Which direction am I sending my energy? Am I going to draw it up my spine so that it comes here to the highest chakra, which is the spiritual center in our body? Am I drawing it that? Or am I sending it out into the world and saying, you'll do exactly as I want you to do, and you'll do it the way I want to do it? Or will you be loyal to your brother who's the mafia? You see what I mean? It just depends. The qualities are real. How we use them and direct them are really what matters. So the chakra isn't bad. It's what we're doing with it. It's how we're moving energy in it. But what happens is this. We exist in this state of super consciousness. And it's in, I mean, it's funny, I'm losing this word right now. Earth, water, wind. The element that it's associated with is what's called space. We call it space. We think space is nothing. I mean, we always think of space as being something empty. If you think about it, that's how you've held it. It's not at all. It's just energy in a very particular form with vibrating at a perfectly almost still vibration. But still, that's that source of the energy of all that becomes. So space is real. What Yogananda calls it is ether. Ether. I'm sorry. He actually calls it super ether, to be honest. It's not on this chart. Here. The third eye he calls super ether. So the jiva enters through the medulla, which is the sixth chakra. But it's the negative pole of the sixth chakra. It's the seat of the ego, because what happens? from that very instant, everything is about going out. It's making a body. It's putting you out into the world to function. You become an embryo, and then a fetus, and then you're a child. You have needs outside. Your life needs to be sustained. We need things from out here. We enter this world of what we call duality. We are no longer part of one. We are now separate from our original spiritual source. From the instant of conception, from that very instant that medulla is made, we've started this whole life that takes us away from our home in God. I'll just say it like that. And we call that duality. We are no longer one with the infinite. We're now an individual. And it becomes very much centered around I, me, mine. That's what happens. That's the nature of the human condition. Nothing wrong with that. These very bodies are what allows our soul to continue on their journey. So we're grateful for this body. We just want to get conscious about what to do about it. So it's ether, and basically, as it forms this body, it begins to vibrate at increasingly gross levels, and it materializes as it comes down from ether to air, which has air now we can measure, starts becoming more physical, if you will, more material, measurable. Then from air, as that condenses, the next element is fire, a lot of energy in fire, and a lot of, you know, friction, right? You can rub sticks together, you make fire. So I'm just trying to give you an image of progressively more physically manifested, sort of gross energy, only in the sense of the vibration, from fire to water to earth, okay? So when people have a lot of their energy still wrapped up in their first chakra, again, they might be very well organized, very much somebody who takes care of things. I'm sure I have a lot of energy in my earth chakra that's just not bad. It's just always who I am, very solid, know where I'm going, very clear, make things happen. That's a lot of first chakra energy. It doesn't have to be bad, but it's like laying down roots and stopping and saying, okay, where am I now? And how am I going to direct energy? Am I going to just unconsciously let this energy run out into the world? I could have. I could have been the chief of some intensive care unit and had a whole staff under me and never had a thought about spirituality and, you know, built homes and done whatever, all of these very physical, material things, taking charge, being loyal to making more money, to sort of controlling more people. Really, it sounds bad when I say it, but I could have done that. We all could. Or I could say, let me get very clear about where I am and make a conscious choice about where I want energy to go. Okay? Now, I'm going to keep you 3 minutes because this is going to be important to start next week, so I just want to say this. The greater the flow of energy, the greater the magnetism that gets built up. That's true in batteries. It's true in electrical. This is not anything that any master said. This is physical laws of the universe, right? The greater the flow of energy, the greater the magnetism. And we know that with bars and magnets and such. Same thing's happening in our spine. So if we try to undo every inclination, every little quality that we have in every one of these chakras, and we're going to hear about the chakras and what each of them means, but if we try to work, how many of you have spent a lifetime trying to work on some quirk of your personality that you can't get over? One quirk, or three, or ten, you know, and you think you're over it, and then sometime in life you look and you go, what in God's name am I doing back here? suddenly I didn't realize that I'm all of a sudden feeling competitive with that person. I thought I put that down 30 years ago. You know, it's like that. We've all had that, and it keeps happening. That's the nature of the human condition. We cannot put out all of these fires. We can't. It will not work. It's like with a magnet. If you tried to turn every little electron around to get them all facing in the same direction, all of the electrons and protons, you know, by the time you had 10 of them turned up here, these 600 billion that you just turned, they'd be going whichever way they want again. No. So what do you do with that? You put that bar near a strong magnet, and what happens? Immediately, all those electrons and protons get right into line, just the way you wanted them to. So here's what I'm saying to you. We're going to talk about each of these chakras, but this center of Christ consciousness, this is the positive pole of the sixth chakra. Mandala is the negative pole, ego. First thing that's born with us. Master said the ego is the soul identified with a body. That's what happens. The soul, jiva, becomes identified with the body. Look at me. Here I am. I'm an individual. I'm going to kick and scream and yell and make a lot of trouble for the first 3 years, and then I'm going to do whatever I darn well choose as I move on in life. Ego consciousness. Here, soul consciousness. Wait a minute. I'm part of something bigger than me. I belong to something that's much more calm and uplifted and at peace and feels relaxed where it is and feels expansive. Oh, I remember. No, you don't. I'm going to get you. People walk around like this, ego pulling on them, right? I mean, Swami Kriyananda said this stuff. Watch people who are walking around arrogant like this, because they have a strong pull on their ego. And what happens when you do this, when you pranam, this act of humility where you're offering, relaxing the ego and offering this center of Christ consciousness? Indians put kumkums, Catholics put ash. Everybody's going to this center for a reason. If we begin to focus as much as we can, as often as we can, as many hours in the day as we can, right here, we just bring our awareness here. We begin to create a magnetism. And we'll talk about it one by one. But even these lower chakras that are struggling to be in charge and treat other people in difficult ways, or, you know, I mean, each chakra has its, what happens if it's out of control, what happens if it's in control. It's fascinating, and that's what we'll spend a lot of time doing now. But no matter what's going on down there that we couldn't possibly organize, no matter what, we cannot. We don't have the time, the energy. We've already spent millions of lives doing it. Let's get on with this. We begin to focus here. We draw energy up. And if we create enough of a draw, it starts pulling in all of those little whirlpools of energy that are here. It draws it in and up, and it goes, this is where I need to go. It's putting a spiritual magnet right here. So we're working on other stuff. Of course we are. We're not out there killing people to get what we want. Oh, you have that nice little laptop and I want it? Here, I'm going to bang you over the head or shoot you in the back. There are people who do that. I mean, hopefully it's not any of us. We've sort of moved beyond that. We have a little more control of our first chakra. But we have to keep drawing the energy up and creating as much magnetism as we can. Okay, I'm going to stop there, but I want you to hold that image, okay? It's a whole week away. Try to not let it go. Now, anybody have any questions before we... Sarah? Yeah, it's in the core, the very center of our body, because our body has been manifested out from it. It's central. There's nothing really to do with our physical spine. David? Actually, in a way, they do, but we're not going to really talk about it much here. It's very complex reading that, but they do have positive and negative poles, which is why the association with the 12 aspects of the zodiac cycles work. But we're not going to get into that. So instead of six, there actually really are 12, but it's more complex than I could even explain, and it doesn't matter in a way for our purposes. But the answer is actually yes. But the positive and negative pole that really matters, they all really matter, but that we can actually work with, and we're going to talk a lot about in the medulla and the center of Christ consciousness, or the third eye, or whatever people call it. They call it all different things. They always mean the same thing. Okay? All right. See you next week. Thank you all.